Matter is Minet versus Gordon Trucking.
I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for a reply.
Very well.
My name is Robert Camp. I'm counsel for plaintiffs Steve and Elaine Minet. We appeal the trial court's decisions related to our cross motion for summary judgment and defendant's motion for reconsider and motion for summary judgment. I think that this case is about whether motor carriers employing Washington-based truck drivers are allowed to circumvent the state overtime laws. The laws that the Boston court specifically said were applicable to Washington-based drivers and are important to state policy, which is to protect workers in the state.
How did they circumvent?
Essentially, they were allowed to submit misrepresentations to the state, to the LNI agency, and through those misrepresentations and omissions, obtain a LNI determination letter that basically absolved them of any liability.
So what exactly are the misrepresentations and omissions?
Yes, ma'am. The company submitted in direct response to a request from LNI. LNI requested, they wanted to know, of your mileage rate, of your per unit rate of compensation, how much of that rate is attributable to overtime compensation? This request is consistent with the regulations WAC 296-128-011 and 012, which require a motor carrier to establish as part of their composite rate of pay a base rate of pay and an overtime component at time and a half the base rate. In response to that request, GTI provided the state a letter, a 1998, it's dated 1998, a reasonably equivalent pay policy. And that pay policy was written and specific to Washington drivers doing work within the state and for overtime work performed within the state. During depositions, the COO and the CFO of GTI admitted that that reasonably equivalent pay policy was not applicable to interstate drivers. It was only applicable to intrastate drivers.
Are there intrastate? There are hourly intrastate drivers.
Yes, sir.
And are there also mileage-based intrastate drivers that work for GTI?
There are mileage-based drivers that will perform intrastate work at time just because of the nature of their job, but there is not a specific category of mileage-based intrastate drivers.
So if the Minets were driving intrastate, let's say they went out of state, they hit 40 hours, and they're driving back in state. During that in-state driving, is that what's counted as an intrastate mileage-based driver?
Well, our position is based off of the testimony of the executives is that 1998 plan didn't apply to interstate drivers at all. They said that it did not apply to their work. It did not apply to interstate drivers, that GTI did not pay interstate drivers overtime prior to 2010. Our position is that 1998 reasonably equivalent plan either went obsolete or was at one point, to your point, applicable to drivers doing mileage rate within the state, But the clear testimony establishes it was not applicable to interstate drivers, which is what our clients are. You can't. If it was, I'll give you another example.
So is there a group of, you may not know, I don't know, but is there a group of intrastate mileage-based drivers that were paid pursuant to the PLUS plan?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
The COO and the CFO also testified, as well as other members of management, that the employee's base rate is their mileage rate of pay. And under WAC 296-128-011, the base rate is the per unit rate of pay for 40 hours of work or less. Well, if your mileage rate of pay is your base rate of pay, there is no possible way there's room in there for a plus factor or for the overtime component required under 011. And this is also consistent with the fact that they testified that the 1998 policy did not apply to the interstate drivers. The other omissions that were made with regard to the L&I determination is that prior to the Bostain decision, the GTI did not believe it was required to pay overtime compensation. It made no changes after the Bostain decision. And as I said previously,
If there was this, I'm curious, just curious about this
yes.
Intrastate, I mean, who this pay policy applied to. I understand that the pay policy, the REP policy, says that it applies to intrastate drivers. But it sounds like you're saying it doesn't apply to anybody.
That is correct. That is correct. The policy on its face says this policy applies to drivers within Washington State, and the policy itself only has within it a method or manner in which to compensate overtime for miles driven within the state. The policy says nothing about interstate drivers, has not been revised.
But you don't dispute that under that pay plan, as it pertained to intrastate drivers, assuming there are some, that pay plan paid the reasonable equivalent of overtime.
If that pay plan applies to intrastate drivers, and those drivers are not my clients, I don't dispute that they have built a factor in there for overtime compensation.
Okay, thank you. You have your rebuttal time.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Adam Smedstad on behalf of the respondent and cross-appellant. Your Honors, the undisputed evidence in this case establishes that since 1998, GTI has paid mileage-based drivers a pay structure that contained the reasonable equivalent of overtime. Your Honor asked a question about whether there were a specific group of exclusively intrastate drivers, and there are not. The distinction in the memo says mileage-based drivers, and it talks about the pay plan including a 20% factor for overtime. It doesn't say intrastate mileage drivers. It just says mileage drivers. Now, admittedly, the memo refers to intrastate work done within the state of Washington, because at the time, the only work that was required to be compensated as reasonably equivalent of overtime was work that was done within Washington. Every witness has testified, every witness in the record has testified, that GTI did not differentiate between intrastate and interstate work. They were all paid under the same mileage-based plans.
So when the Minettes are driving out of state, they come back and they've hit 40 hours and they're driving from the border back to Seattle. Did they get overtime compensation for that?
Their overtime compensation is built into their mileage rate from the first mile. That's the implication. That's the point of the 1998 memo, which says that it has a 20% factor for overtime. That's what counsel has indicated, and plaintiffs have conceded in their briefs, that they're not challenging, but that that pay plan, that that memo included a 20% factor for overtime. So the Minettes.
How do you reconcile, though, that you told the Minettes, and I assume you're not disputing that, you told the Minettes and other interstate drivers that they were not receiving overtime, with your statement now that, in fact, this pay policy did apply to them and it did include overtime?
Well, what the Minettes said in their affidavits was that they were not told, they were told that they were not eligible for overtime.
Right.
Mr. Gordon did not testify that they never, that Gordon Trucking didn't pay overtime. He testified that prior to Bostain, he didn't believe they were obligated to. But the fact of the matter is,
he was unaware that they paid any overtime. Is that correct?
Well, he testified specifically that these mileage-based plans were the same interstate and intrastate. And if you look at the portions of the appellant's brief, this is a completely consistent with the way in which these folks were paid. They were paid on a practical miles basis. In other words, they get paid not on the actual driver, the number of miles that they drive between any two destinations, but rather on the estimate of the amount of miles, regardless of the two points, between which they travel. Thus, if there was going to be some suggestion that they were getting paid intrastate a higher rate that included a factor for overtime and interstate a lower rate, it would be unworkable. They would have to figure out which miles were associated with miles outside of Washington. Even the Minettes did not say that they got paid a different rate of time, a rate of pay, mileage rate, for their interstate work. So the unequivocal testimony here is, and Ms. Geving, who is the director of payroll for Gordon Trucking and has been since 1994, testified that Gordon Trucking has never differentiated between interstate and intrastate work with respect to mileage-based drivers. In order for there to be a basis on which the plaintiffs can contest LNI's determination that the plans that were submitted contained the reasonable equivalent of overtime, they would have to demonstrate the existence of an alternate pay plan. There is no there's no evidence of an alternate pay plan. This is an important distinction from Bostain. In Bostain, you had a non-Washington-based employer who had a location near the Oregon border, and they paid, Food Express paid Mr. Bostain an hourly rate unless he traveled more than 200 miles in a day, at which point they switched him to a mileage-based rate. They said, we're not going to pay you for an overtime rate because we think that you're not going to work more than 40 hours in a week without traveling more than 200 miles. So once they switch over to the 200-mile mileage-based pay, they're compensating them on a mileage-based rate that does not even purport to have the reasonable equivalent of overtime. So all that Mr. Bostain had to do was come in and say, the mileage-based plan does not even purport to have a reasonable equivalent of overtime component, and my employer said, I'm not paying you for overtime for hours. Here, the undisputed evidence is that the plans that were submitted to LNI have, since 1998, contained a 20% factor for overtime. Admittedly,
in your argument to the Supreme Court, in which you sought discretionary review, United States Supreme Court, you did state that if, in fact, you were required to pay overtime for interstate drivers, as that case dictates, your labor costs would increase by 16%, which sort of suggests that you're thinking overtime is not included because it's going to be added on to what you've got. Was that argument inaccurate?
I believe that it was. I struggled with that. I was not the lawyer that wrote the brief. I wasn't involved in the submission, but I did read it, and when I finally figured out what the problem is, the footnote, which I believe is footnote 12 or footnote 16, is actually just a mathematical calculation. And what it talks about, and this is consistent with the distinction in Bostain, Bostain did not involve a mileage-based plan that included the reasonable equivalent of overtime. What the footnote in Gordon Trucking's brief, amicus brief to the Supreme Court said, It did a mathematical calculation, said if you're going to pay straight time for the first 40 hours and then you're obligated to pay overtime after that, and then it divided the resulting numbers and came up with a 16% differential. What it did not say was that Gordon Trucking does not now pay the reasonable equivalent of overtime through its mileage-based plan. And such a suggestion would actually be irrelevant in the context of Bostain because that case did not involve any issue with respect to whether an alternative-based piece rate plan included a reasonable equivalent of overtime. Your Honors, on our cross-appeal, we also believe that the trial court erred in refusing to strike Mr. Brandt's declaration. As we have demonstrated in our papers, Mr. Brandt conceded that...
Would we need to reach this cross-appeal if we agreed with the recommendation that you're making to affirm the summary judgment?
You would not. We brought the cross appeal because we thought that even if the plaintiffs had carried their burden in demonstrating that the L&I determination was arbitrary and capricious, which, as the court is well aware, does not mean that this court or the trial court believes that L&I got it wrong. It has to mean that looking at the record and all the facts and attendant circumstances, there is no reasonable, plausible relationship between L&I's determination and its conclusion. It happened serendipitously that Gordon Trucking submitted 26 weeks of the Minats information in connection with the L&I submission, and in each and every week and for each and every set of period of time, they not only earned a substantially higher effective hourly rate, but they earned 1.5 times that rate for overtime.
What about, what's your response to the argument that misleading information was submitted to L&I that procured the result?
Your Honor, the rule itself, pursuant to which the application was made, envisions that prior to 2007, a trucking company would have had a mileage-based plan with interstate and intrastate work being done that would be submitted for approval. And that's exactly what this was. That's why we submitted it. And in fact, the only, quote, misleading information is this notion that says, on the memo that says, for work performed in Washington, and L&I could read that as well as anyone else could. You can't, I was persuaded to remove from my brief a reference to Groucho Marx, in which he said, who are you going to believe, me or your own eyes? You can't say that L&I was defrauded based on something that's on the face.
They may have read that, but they also had Ms. Pruitt's affirmative statement that these plans were, we gave notice to all the workers about this plan to pay overtime back in 1998, and that's not accurate, is it?
Well, the Minats weren't there in 1998, and there is no indication that information was not disseminated in 1998. Okay. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. The next case. Oh, sorry.
Sorry, Your Honor.
Please step forward. I apologize. You have your 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honors, I'd just like to point you to page 29 of our brief. Steve Gordon and Robert Goldberg were the two individuals deemed and designated as most familiar with the compensation plans at issue in this case. Both those individuals testified that the 1998 reasonable pay plan letter did not apply to long-haul interstate drivers. Patrick Gendro, the executive vice president of GTI for Human Resources, testified he had no basis whatsoever to give an opinion as to whether the plaintiffs were receiving the reasonable equivalent overtime. He also testified he is unaware of a single document within GTI's possession that references that drivers received the reasonable equivalent to overtime. Steve Gordon said no overtime compensation was paid to drivers, interstate drivers, prior to 2010. Taking into account those admissions, there is no way to come to the conclusion that L&I would have still found this to be a reasonably equivalent pay plan. Now, As far as the inconsistent statements between these courts and the United States Court of Appeal, GTI sits here today and says, oh, well, this is because we might have to pay time and a half based off an hourly calculation, et cetera, et cetera. The standard is the reasonable equivalent to overtime, traditional overtime. If it's already built into your plan now, if you had to change over to an hourly plan, presumably it's going to be reasonably equivalent. There wouldn't be a 16% increase. It wasn't included in the plan back then, and it's not included in the plan today. Now, the Boston discussed, while the Boston case involved an hourly compensation period, the Boston court discussed in detail 4936-132F. The applicable comparison is between what they would have received under their plan versus traditional overtime. The L&I determination is arbitrary and capricious as well, not only because of the misrepresentations, because the ESA 8.3 protocol itself says anything within these protocols that is inconsistent with the WAC regs, those regs control. They did not make GTI provide any documentation required by the regs. They did not.
Is there some other alternative pay plan that the Minettes were paid under that's separate and apart from this plan for intrastate drivers? I mean, is there some other?
They were paid under the plus plan. Thank you.
You may finish your answer.
There were six plans submitted to L&I for approval, all with the same analysis. Only two of the six were approved, and they were paid under one of those plans.
Okay. Thank you, Council.
Thank you.